I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Hey guys, this is Stack and Pennies presented by Mobile One. The playoff grid is set. MTJ is a regular season champ, and Chris Buescher makes it three in a row on oval tracks. RFK is on fire. We're going to break down my close call of the day. We're going to break down all things Daytona, pit road boats and woes, and some playoff action for you. So buckle up. This is Stacking Pennies.
Stacking them deep, selling them cheap.
It tastes like gasoline, rubber, and victory.
We're just out here stacking pennies.
Hello, friends. I'm Corey the Joy, driver of the number 7 Chevy Camaro, joined by the two amigos. To my left, Mr. Ryan Flores.
What's up, amigo?
Was back in action this week.
Oh, it was a hot one.
Oh, my goodness. It was muggy. Were you down there, Danielle?
No, I couldn't be there. I wanted to be there. I had a sickling at home I had to take care of.
Shout out to Robbie.
Yeah. He's better, though.
He's good to go now.
Watching it on TV.
Well, all you missed was a lot of humidity.
No rain, though.
It was great.
That was great. I didn't miss running tires. I was on like my 8th set of tires running the pit road, and I'm like, didn't miss this.
Yeah, could have been brunching right now.
Missed the pit stops, but
could have been brunching instead of running tires. Don't lie to me.
Okay.
When they all came rifling down at 55 miles an hour, did you get a little scared the first time?
No.
A little bit scared.
Not even slightly.
I don't know about that.
Not even a little tremor in my foot.
Nope. Felt like nothing. You didn't miss a beat.
Stoic.
Just looked at my car, made it to the jump line, just jumped off, changed the tires, and then it left.
Did you help get that thing on casters and get it loaded up afterwards?
No. Dude, golly, that thing was wrecked.
What's like the process? Like, you watch on the big screen and be like, oh, I guess we're going to pack our stuff up now. How's that work?
I was watching the big screen, and I was like, cool, we're going to win the stage. We'll get ready. Like, I was getting ready to put 4 tires on it. And I saw that thing hook right into the fence, and I unplugged my gun. That was what I did. I cleaned my socket out and put it away, and then started packing up to leave. Yeah, I was like, okay, there's no chance we're fixing this thing.
No.
Thank God he was okay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to see – that's the second big hit he's taken. Nashville was – I would say Nashville took a toll for sure, but you don't want to see your guy ever hit the fence. You definitely don't want to see him hit the fence that hard the week before the playoffs and – you know, this grueling 3-week stretch we have coming up. So it was tough, man. He was not happy with Chris Bell, and I wouldn't have been either.
Well, Ty Gibbs, right? No, Christopher Bell was pushing Ty Gibbs. I watched that wreck back 3 or 4 times. I don't think he touched him.
I don't know, but
I
want to be mad at him, man. Don't change my mind.
I talked to Coach, though.
He never touched him.
Coach said that C-Bell, they're fine. He said C-Bell and Ty flew him on the plane together. They were joking around.
Well, I mean, they were trying to win the stage, pushing up. But I don't.
Chris said he was sorry, so I don't know.
I watched it 3 or 4 different times. I don't think the 20 hit his bumper. I might be wrong, but I don't think I am. But
I don't know.
I would say this.
I'm going to be mad. You're not going to change my mind.
That's fine. you have the right to be mad because the 12 took a shot.
Yeah.
Both Ryans took big shots. Ryan Preece, too. Mm. What a magnificent wreck that was. Holy mackerel.
Dude.
And the narrative over the last 16 months has been the next-gen car is not safe. I'm going to flip the script on that because if the car we had previous to the next-gen car flips like that one, it's a yard sale, and there's nothing left. And the driver is not okay.
We're lucky we didn't hurt Joe Logano bad when he flipped and got hit by at Talladega and got hit by Bubba Wallace, right, with the old car.
Yeah.
This car, I didn't know, like, I half-assed forgot that race cars could wreck like that.
Oh, my God.
And you got to, something you got to remember, okay, we see that happen at Knoxville with a 410 sprint car that weighs 1,500 pounds, if that. That thing weighs 3,250?
No, 3,650. 3,650.
The old cars were 3,250. 3,650 pounds, 20 feet in the air, doing 100 miles an hour.
Just flipping like it's a matchbox car.
NASCAR was saying it's 190 miles per hour.
When that, like, thing lifted off?
Five 360 degrees barrels, and then I think 10 total.
The worst part is every time that it hit like it. Okay, so it got upside down, then it dug in with the driver's side A-post, right? Like right where he's sitting. Then it hit again on the driver's door. And then the last one, it landed flat on the cage, upside down. So every hit, like you look at kind of the angles and which way his head would be going in the car, and it was the roof hatch came right off. So he had to be covered in just dirt.
Mud. Yeah.
And it's just like every way it hit was the worst possible way. So
and
then,
he's racing this weekend.
He got out.
It's crazy.
Got out.
What a miracle. Thank God.
I talked to him yesterday. He assured me Nicole Kidman does not work down at Halifax. That's what he said.
No, I don't imagine she does. I'm sure he was looking for her. But, man, good to see both those guys walk out unscathed. Because the fans that are sitting on their couch at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night drinking a Busch Light do not realize how much that hurts. It freaking hurts, dude, to wreck that much, especially head-on like that, like Ryan Blaney did.
Oh.
The substraps feel like they go through your body. And just because we walk out and we kind of like shake it off like a bull rider and you just keep it moving doesn't mean that you're like, oh my goodness, every bone in my body freaking hurts. So that's, I'm not going to say it's nice. It is a realization that this stuff is very, very dangerous. And that's a place why people pack it out. It really is. People like to watch the crashes. That's why they go to Daytona and Talladega, because they're anticipating something like that. Also, Ryan Preece missed my bumper by about a half an inch.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, it was going to be huge.
Could have been you.
Yeah.
Could have been me, but it wasn't.
What did you
top
think?
10. I looked in my mirror. I'm like, oh, my goodness. He went for a ride. And then I went down the front stretch, and I was like, it was under caution, so I was looking at the big screens. There's three of them on the front stretch. And I was like slowing down to like turn my head to look at the big screen like, holy what a wreck. Because every single, especially the one that was in turn three looking back down of just that thing, just I was like, I can't believe. And I would like reach up and like pull my belts a little bit tighter, like, here we go. I don't want this to be me.
I bet. Hey, what do you think about looking back at it now? Like, thank God he's good. Car did its job. NASCAR's going to look at it, continue to make improvements. But I was thinking, like, you guys still had to finish a race. When you see something like that, how easy is it to just shake that off and dial back in?
So I heard some murmurs after the race of some people not being quite as aggressive. I eavesdropped a couple conversations, heard one yesterday about their guy saying, I might just be content to ride here. I was not one of those people, because I get paid for the last lap, not the all the other laps before that. So I think that's just, for me, how I look at it is just part of the game. But it seemed like this race was less, or was more tame and more respectful than previous super speed races have been in the past. The less bump drafts in bad spots. You saw a lot less guys get turned on like the straightaways like we've seen at some previous races. So I think after that, there's at least some consideration to when you drag a little bit of brake, when you're approaching somebody to hit them, more so than what it had been, where it's just like, let's drive through this guy and try to make some momentum. But I don't think that that's a factor in majority of our brain. There's already a couple screws loose when it comes to driving race cars 200 miles an hour. So I'd kind of chalk it up to that.
I saw a frosty take that I would like your opinion on. Somebody said, and a couple people had said this, they said, has this run its course yet? Can we stop with super speed racing? And that's where I am on the fence. And like Ryan Preece said, Ryan Preece is a racer's racer, right? He tweeted out right after that, if you're going to drive race cars, you got to be tough. So at what point, like, I feel like those four races throughout the year, and call it six now with Atlanta, is the time when you're like, yeah, it's pretty dangerous to be a race car driver. It's safer now than it's ever been.
For sure.
But there's still, like you said, a little bit of that bull rider aspect. You don't go ride bulls and get mad when you get kicked in the ribs.
No.
Right? Like, it's part of it. You're signed up to do it. So I was interested on your take on
there, and there's a reason why when you roll through the tunnel at Richmond, it's a little bit different than when you roll through the tunnel at Daytona, right? Because you know, you weigh the risk, you know the reward, and you know what comes about it if you are the best guy that day. You also, it's pretty apparent when you roll through there that that was the guy last time somebody rolled through that tunnel on the flip side of that, right? So, like, you just, you kind of look at, now it's not like every time you roll through the tunnel, it's like, well, Dale passed away, Neil Bonnet, you start racking up the names of guys, but you know that inherently that racing is a dangerous sport, and places like that, that's revered, it's like even more of a realization, like, okay, like, I have to, even though it looks easy from the people in the grandstands or on TV, like, there is still skill involved to keep yourself somewhat safe and your competitors somewhat safe and also be competitive. So
I can tell you it doesn't look easy at home.
Yeah.
I think y'all are badasses. That's what I think. I mean, watching you guys go three wide, 12 rows deep, I'm like, I'm nervous sitting on my couch. I don't know how y'all do it.
That was definitely hectic for sure. I'm like, you're just waiting on one guy to make a bobble and wipe out 10. Speedway racing has tightened up quite a bit. I think I had an interesting maybe realization a bit of where I feel like the rear view camera hurts speedway racing because you can see so clearly behind you. You can cover lanes and block easier.
Yeah.
Chase taped his up.
Because the camera got sideways or something. Yeah. So,
but does that, it wasn't a distraction after that, I guess, if you don't.
Yeah, if you don't have it, you just don't look at it. But you can see so clearly behind you, the camera, it's almost like I drove that ARCA car at Watkins Glen, right? And you can't see anything but the roof behind you.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it this week of like, oh, you can see so much clearly with the cup car behind you that it makes covering the runs way, way easier. I would be team no rear view camera. We're not going to go back on that because that's just the progression of the sport.
Yeah.
But there are several factors, I think, that you can do to put a little bit of the sport, like a little bit of gamesmanship back into speeder racing. People can talk about tapered spacer and spoiler height and this and that, but there's some overall broad topics of like spotters are better, drivers are better. People understand how to make track position at speedways. People know how to play the fuel game at speedways to leapfrog other guys that don't. So speedway racing has definitely looking different now
in the race
2023. No.
You could go from the back to the front.
Yeah, you can be aggressive on the top and make some stuff happen.
I think with three to go in stage two before we got augered in the fence, we were going to win the stage, but I think he was like ninth or tenth. And that's what was so upsetting is whoever wins speedway races is the car that loses track position and always cycles to the front.
Yep.
And I think the last two speedway races we went to, it was kind of the same car stayed at the front the whole time. This one, you were three, four wide. Handling came into effect. You saw a nine car about cause a big wreck. He got tight off of four one time.
That was huge.
So you could see whose cars were working better, whose were faster. And that's why it was such a bummer, I think, when our car got destroyed. Is like, man, that was a car that really could have won this race.
You guys always have rocket ships at the speedways.
Hassler, bro.
Always.
Yeah, I wish I could say I had anything to do with that.
I'm jealous
of
how
credit,
fast
but I have nothing
Ryan
to do
Blaney's
with
cars are at speedways. Because on the flip side,
he does
mine
a good
was
job
not
too.
Much
he
of
does.
A rocket ship. Yeah, we qualified 37th, which is a little bit dejecting, which we don't put a whole lot of effort because it takes a lot of time to stack up the pennies of all the little things that make a car efficient through the air to qualify well, single car at a speedway. And it's apparent when you qualify 37th out of 39 that it's not very, very high up on our team's priority list to make that area strong because we can just get it up there and jam it in the pack and hopefully have a good day. But now, even more so than ever, I feel like you have to have a car that's got some potential speed in it if you want to be on the offensive and make those types of runs to be able to lead a line. Didn't feel like I was fast enough to really lead a line, so I was a bit more defensive than I wanted to be. And I had to put myself in like a kind of a safe spot, hopefully miss a Rex. But I was trying to think back because we're trying to do a chorus close call of the week each and every week. And the only one that I felt like I was super excited about was the last lap. And we had run, we got kind of pinned on like sixth or seventh on the bottom lane on that green, white checkered. And we were in position to finish probably 15th to 17th. And I got, somebody was on my right rear quarter panel into three, and it separated me from Ty, who I was pushing. And there was like, in the middle of three and four, I'm like, ah, oh, shucks, we're going to finish, you know, 15th, 16th. And the 34 was coming with a run, and I, in the middle, and I pulled up in front of it, and it was like the thing had freaking nitrous oxide. And out of turn four, I just kept it wide open up through the middle, which everybody on the white flag at a speedway just commits to holding it wide open, whether you flip, whether you end up on fire, you cross the start finish line. And the seas kind of parted, and I passed like five guys in the span of like 200 yards. And I looked at the pylon, and I was like, hell yeah, that's top 10. And then you look over at the pylon or like the TV board on the left, and you're like,
where'd it finish?
Yes, got it.
10th. Yeah.
Because for me, 11th.
10 sounds so much better.
A big financial difference.
Oh, it is.
And we stacked some pennies on that one.
Really?
Yeah.
How sketchy.
Just one spot?
Yeah.
Top 10 bonus.
Well, there's ladders, right? 11th to 14th.
Right.
11th to 15th. 6th to 10th.
Sorry, Ty. Because wasn't it a 10-11 for Spire?
It was. He got out, and he was like, you suck.
Yeah.
How sketchy is it?
It was a good day for
Team
Overall, huh?
Like, it looks sketchy, like slowing down there.
Yeah, because you don't really know the pace if somebody's going to just lift or they're going to hit the brakes. Yeah, because that's why you see a lot of guys wreck after the checkered, because somebody lifts faster than what you think. Or you're racing somebody to the line and the guy in front of you lifts and you're driving the back.
They don't realize that you're coming behind them. Right. And they just like, yeah, my race is over.
Speaking of stacking pennies, this is going to be my penny stacker of the week story, but I'm going to move it up in the show because I said it three times this weekend and cried every time, so I'm just going to try not to cry this time. So we had Team Nugo on the car, which we had three families at the racetrack this week, all of courageous kids either through pediatric cancer, they beat it, rung the bell, or they're currently going through it, and they bring their siblings and they bring their families and show them a great time. So there was a kid named Virgil there. He was 2.5. And his dad, he was a huge Corey fan years ago before he even had a son. So when he followed the podcast, he followed social media. And when Virgil got diagnosed, and then we announced, so that he got diagnosed, started going through his battle, we did the partnership with Team Nigu and Spire. Virgil's dad wrote to Spire, or to Team Nigu, this is one of our, like, these are both of my passions coming together, right? Team Nigu, who's been supporting our family through this journey, and my favorite NASCAR driver. And so Nigu says, hey, what, where are you guys out of? We're out of Florida. You're going to come to Daytona. Absolutely. That was like 6-8 months ago. So the last Virgil is goes to the hospital, gets his clear scan, rings the bell, walking out of the hospital, they find a heads-up penny literally walking out of the hospital. So his dad picks it up.
No
Virgil
way.
Picks it up. And they keep it on him to eventually give it to me one day whenever, if they ever met me. So I got to meet that family, and they told me that story and gave me that penny and freaking started bawling. One of those that like just chokes you up. So I took the penny and helicopter taped to the dashboard this weekend. So, yeah, Virgil's head to penny brought us a little bit of luck for a top 10. So that was pretty cool.
Wow. Thank you, Virgil.
Thank you, Virgil. He's the penny stacker of the year.
How old is
century.
That little guy?
2.5.
Oh, he's little guy.
Little guy, yeah. Freaking loving it. Just smashing the diecast car all around the week.
He was?
So that was cool, man. That also gives great perspective over the weekend of just, you know, as much as I want to be great at driving race cars, it gives perspective of like the real hardships people are fighting for. So to bring hope to guys like that, to show those guys a great time at the racetrack and to be a good representative for those guys and give them a great run makes you feel warm and fuzzy. So that was my close call and penny stack of the week early.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do your pennies stretch as far as they used to? Most likely it doesn't. Here's why. It took 200 years for the U.S. to print its first $5 trillion. Today, Washington has done that in just 3 years. The problem, every new dollar makes each one of your dollars worth less, robbing you and every other hardworking American. But you can stop this cycle of robbery by diversifying your IRA or 401k into gold, an asset that has stood the test of time. Our new sponsor, Birch Gold Group, has helped tens of thousands of Americans protect their retirement savings with physical precious metals. Now you can too. Get a free info kit on gold right now by texting the word Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, to 989-898. With an A-plus rating with the BBB, you're in good hands with Birch Gold. So get your free info kit by texting Corey to the number 989-898. Go check them out. Put some pennies in some gold. Danielle, so you watched the race from home as you were the caregiver for your husband, yeah. Robbie. He was down and out. What did you take about the race?
I mean,
couple storylines. Bubba's in.
I haven't, like,
Chase is kind of in, but yep, mostly out.
I haven't been this excited for a cup race. Like, I was like squealing when the green, like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I was so, we talked about it being like a game seven moment. Like, I was like nervous.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my, like, you feel it. Like, I was like, this is going to be unbelievable. Like, don't ever leave Daytona. Like, for regular season finale.
Great.
God, it created so much drama.
Yeah.
I thought Bubba was going to hold on. Because I feel like some of the best plate racers were in. Via by points, or they'd already locked in.
Yeah.
And we saw a repeat winner in Chris Buescher. And I had a good feeling, like, if Bubba could hang on, drive a clean race. I started to get a little nervous for, you know, until Seabell kind of took out Ty Gibbs. And then Bubba just kind of had to execute. And yeah. Denny said he didn't really have it. Like, that battle, I was kind of hoping played out a little between he and Martin Truex for the regular season championship was a little bit more down to the wire. But, like, Truex locked it up pretty early. But for a guy that didn't make it or win a race last year to have the kind of turnaround he did, I thought was pretty unbelievable.
What do we think that is?
They didn't change much.
23?
No, 19.
Oh, they're 19?
Yeah.
It's little things, right? It's a little
bit
everywhere.
And this might not be factual, so interject. Didn't he finish fourth in points last year and there was just so many winners he got bumped out?
They didn't have a great year last year. I don't know.
I'm going to say with enough conviction it might be true, but they didn't win a race in regular season. They didn't win a race all season.
No.
There was a lot of winners last year. They had their struggles.
Yeah.
They have definitely been stronger this year. I think Martin is the type of guy that when he has confidence, he's dangerous.
For sure.
And the Toyotas have been better this year just all around. The Fords have been worse, so that gets some more cars out of the way for him. But yeah, they're a team. That's a strong team. Strong. James Smalls is smart. And it just takes a little bit of, like you said, a little bit of right rear toe.
Dude.
A blade of bar. Like, it's a small things when you stumble upon the car working well and you give a driver like that confidence.
Yeah, you give them a feel.
Yeah, a good pit crew, and that's what, you know, they can win a lot of races, and everybody damn near got out of his way, right? It was like the points leader at the time, just like the one car was the points leader and they had a rough stretch. We were the points leader and we had a rough stretch, and he just was consistent through the end of the summer.
Yeah.
So
what'd you guys think of Bubba holding on, making it? That was a pretty emotional moment. MJ.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was happy for Bubba.
And I did see that Denny said that MJ's been a bit more involved since he sold the Hornets.
Yeah.
Or so the majority equity of the Hornets. So that's cool, man. And I do love the we're going to miss out on some energy of the fan base not being super interested in the playoffs with Chase not being eligible for the Drivers' Championship. But I think there's also people, whether you like them or not, tune in to see how Bubba does. Good, bad, or indifferent, right? And the only guy whose name was on the ticker underneath SportsCenter this week about making the playoffs was Bubba Wallace. All right, so like it or not, Bubba Wallace moves the needle for the sport. He has this many playoff points, which isn't going to bode very well for him.
Zero.
So it's going to be tough maybe to get to the round of 12, but beyond that, you better
really
tighten
it up. First round's good for him. They're good at Darlington. He's won at Kansas.
Yep, Bristol.
Let me ask you this, because people talk about how big it is to make the playoffs all the time, like how big a deal it is for that team, for any team. What does it do inside the walls of an organization? What are the incentives? Okay, great. He makes the playoffs. He's running for a championship. Does it make it easier to sign sponsors? More money coming through the door? Why is it such a big deal?
Yes, all of it. I mean, there's so many things, but I don't even think it's so much. I don't think those guys are popping champagne bottles here on Tuesday that they made the playoffs, because they have the tools and budget and resources to expect to make the playoffs. It would be a tremendous letdown internally if one of those two don't make it, let alone if, I think that that's the level of what they are supported by their partners, Toyota, and their drivers are equipped to not have an excuse not to be one of those top 16 guys. So, we haven't really seen Tyler Reddick make a lot of noise the last couple of weeks, but those guys can pop. I mean, like you said, they're great at Kansas. And Tyler Reddick can show up any week, and if they hit on it, can be a contender for the win for sure. But, yeah, it's not surprising to me to see both cars from 23-11 in the playoffs, because those guys are – that's a stout, stout team.
Yeah, so – I would say for a team to be, you at the beginning of the year, if you ask any team, especially a well-funded team, what their goal is to win a championship, make playoffs, win a championship. So it's not, I would say the effect of making the playoffs is not as important as what the repercussions of not making the playoffs are, right? Because like I've been on teams that miss the playoffs, or when you get knocked out of the playoffs, you just feel like your year's over, and there's still a grueling stretch of races that go 10 weeks straight with some of our toughest racetracks. And I think we saw in the past where when we could all build our own race cars, where resources would just go to the teams that were in the playoffs at that point. But last year we fired off the first two races of the playoffs were non-playoff drivers that won. But being on teams like, I'll take the two car for instance, right? When they're a team that you have penciled in to make the playoffs, and when they don't, it's a lot of wind out of the sails, and that's when you see stuff like a crew chief swap or people getting moved around. You start thinking about what you're going to do different with your race team, because the goal for everybody is to win a championship, make the playoffs, have a deep playoff run, and put yourself in a position to win the championship. And a lot of teams do have financial incentives where your sponsor pays X amount, and they also you get a this is the how much you get when you make the playoffs, or if you make the playoffs, or if you win a race. So I never take it for granted to be in the playoffs, because it's like super, it's the pinnacle of sport, right? If you're one of the top 16 playoff teams, you're doing it. And it's just a different level. And you kind of swim through that last 5 weeks. Hell, I took it off the last 5 weeks of the season where,
you're on IR.
Yeah, you go to Michigan, you have backwards pit stops, but now it's like, all right, we're in it. Let's go.
Wow. Okay, so flip side of that then, how do you think Chase in the 9 feels?
Weird spot. Because at the end of the day, all the money filters through the owner's championship. The 9 car's in the owner's championship.
Thanks in part to you.
Yeah, I really.
Jordan Taylor.
Yeah, later.
Shout out Josh Berry.
Yeah. And shout out Alan Gustafson for taking these different guys, myself being on that list, and just treading water, right, with your guy being out, with the inconsistency of who's in the car each and every week, and he's under a lot of hate from a very passionate Chase Elliott fan
bro,
base.
Bro, if you are hating on Alan I love the way you say
it. I know, I do too. I love Gustafson. How you say Gustafson. It.
No, if you hate him, like, don't Gustafson. Listen. Hey, he wasn't snowboarding
There's a
15
large
hours
portion
before practice
of the fan
in Vegas.
Base, though, that thinks he should be fired, which I think is just
That's so
absurd.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
your driver's
so
not
ridiculous.
In the playoffs the because he broke his leg snowboarding.
Yeah.
That's why he's not in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not the Kuzmi's
fault.
So,
like, don't say anything to Allen Gustafson at all.
But yeah. Bubba is not in the owner's championship. So and
Filippo what he was last year.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point. And Reddick is. So, like, if you're 2311 or you're Hendrick, how do you deal with that? Like, you're in the owners, but you're not in the drivers. Who gets the best of what? Does anyone take priority over the other?
I think it's all the same now. You know, you used to have cars that had a little bit better.
Equal, right.
You know, like, this one has
a little
couple
more
counts.
Force, yeah.
This one's got our latest underbody. This one's got, you know, the updated geometry. Now it's everything's the same.
Yeah.
So if you find something, say that you find a geometry that's better, you just go change the shims in the other car.
Exactly. And those cars, especially being over there, you know, 2-3 days at Hendrick, to see how meticulous they are of every detail. And, you know, they're two or three, they're working on their Kansas car, right? Their Faro Arm and their Kansas car, probably even their Bristol car. They're that far out and they're that prepared where there's not one piece of any four of those cars, regardless of where they're at in standings, not getting equal to the other ones. Now there's tendencies of this crew chief and that crew chief, and they got their own little touches on their own car, right? But generally speaking, there's no different center link that they're going to try, that there's no oil tank that's got a little more downforce. There's no body that blows a little bit better. So there's not so much of that. And I also don't think if you're in any playoff, whether it's driver or owners, the intention in which you prepare is the same. And even for us, we're what, 25th in points. Like, I challenge my team, even though we still have a lot to race for, points and pay and all that stuff to come along with it. But like the last year or two, I'm like, guys, just because we're not in the playoffs doesn't mean we can't act like it's our own. Like 10 weeks, we can pass four or five guys in points. Let's lock in here and act like we're in a pressure situation of the playoffs. And that might sound dumb to say, but you have to prepare that way. If we pop off a win next year and we find ourselves in there, it's not new, or the amount of intensity that we bring to the racetrack is new, or it's, you know, it's pressure because guys like Denny, like Harvick, the guys that have decades of playoff experience, that stuff adds up of just how to internalize and deal with the pressures of the media and expectations for a new team. That's all you know, stuff that kind of gets exposed over those 10 weeks, which brings us to the next point. RFK, talking about a team out of nowhere. Chris Buescher, the fourth most playoff points leading into the playoffs. Love to see it.
Yeah, if we went to the championship four today, he'd be in it.
Yeah, but we don't.
Well,
can he make it?
And it started 5 weeks ago at Richmond.
Yeah.
So it's been, you know, he's clicked off.
Three wins in the last 5 weeks.
It's pretty,
which
pretty
is
impressive.
The whoever came up with this marketing campaign, like their Fifth Third Bank. And so it was three wins. I was like, 3 wins in 5 weeks. Fifth. I was like, that's.
That's low hanging fruit. Don't give them that much credit.
I think it's pretty cute. Hey. Like, I wouldn't have
thought
of it.
I switch my accounts over.
Yeah.
what do you think about Brad being married to him there at the end? Do you think he was?
Yes.
I think that.
If his name's not in the building, you're definitely seeing a pull out.
I've been with Brad. I've been with Brad when there was questionable teammate moves.
Yeah.
Right. I've been on a car that
his name was on the building.
But yeah, do you think he learned from those mistakes? Like what happened with Joey in the Daytona 500 and 2020?
Because he doesn't stand to benefit from Joey Logano in the Daytona 500. He stands a lot to be gained with his team car, the one he owns, winning a race or Daytona 500 for that point in case where that would, if you know that for your overall company with 100 employees. If you are content to finish second for the financial benefit of your team, and you also are getting a piece of that financial benefit from pushing them, you'd be a little more apt to push them.
Does he make that business decision, though? Like, you went back and watched the final two laps.
Into three, where you probably look around and realize if you make a move, then you're probably both not going to win, you know, something like that. Because Brad is also, like, every single other race car driver in the field is selfish and you want to go get the best finish for yourself and your team on that day. But I think that he's realized that the only way, the best way that RFK as an entire company could benefit to finish potentially 1-2 was to just push the hell out of him and stay married to him to start finish line. So little bit I was a little bit surprised to not see, you know, when those guys got pushed out in the short shoot coming to the line, that he didn't try to duck out and side draft them and potentially race it out. But if his name's on the side of the building, he definitely does.
Maybe he needed like you know, they put those big pictures in the lobby. Maybe he just needed a
Pushing
him.
He needs a new picture in the lobby.
Yeah, needed a,
but it felt like he looked to do it on the white flag lap, and the four was there.
Brad wasn't looking to pass him out of two. The four was trying to side draft him and almost turned him.
Yeah, they just kind of bounced off of each other.
Yeah.
Brad was almost making the move to take the bottom momentum away. So
yeah, to cover it. But he wasn't looking to pass 17 because he also knows that if you are going to make a move in your second, you don't make it until 200 yards before the start finish line.
Yes.
On the white, coming to the checker.
The rule usually for teammates, I'm going to spoil this for everybody at home. The rule for teammates is out of four, then you race.
Yep.
Get out of four, and then you race.
Or
because you know at that point if
one of you two better
one
win.
One of you two is going to win. Yep. Unless you wreck each other in the tri-oval.
Yeah.
Then you're going to get an ass chew.
No doubt.
But sounds like you can hear about it more. There's an RFK feature on YouTube dropping Wednesday. So tune in there. Brad will tell you all about it.
I'm sure he will. Go check out Bradley and RFK and the recent hot streak those guys have been on NASCAR's YouTube page. I just love Daytona, man. It's freaking awesome.
I'm still a little bit on the fence that race might have to go to Atlanta and we go back to Daytona 4th of July.
You're saying people are frosty. Oh. I feel like you're the one that's frosty.
I don't know. We've talked about that a lot.
Merriman has been on the show, so he's got some frosty taste.
Did you not like Daytona in July?
I loved it.
Me too.
And I remember Chip Wall gave me crap about it. Why can't you get on board? Because I was mad. On the radio, I was mad about it. I was like, Chip, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, you are breaking tradition, bro. You can't do this. Is American.
Atlanta's sitting there.
And he's like, give it a chance. I'm telling you. And I'm in.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It was pretty.
I like it too, where, you know, Daytona's getting weathered. It's getting bumpy. It's getting, you know, obviously hot and slick at the end of the summer. And handling does come into play, which is why you saw three wide racing, unlike you do at some other places that we go to at a speedway. It was a good concoction for a race.
Yeah, only two cautions, but the two that were, obviously, we talked about big cautions. But, yeah,
huge.
I thought it was a good race.
What about trucks? Trucks at Milwaukee. Was that a good race?
Sparks wants to – you want to bring cup cars there. Sparks. Skip.
Oh, yeah. I'm not Ryan Spark. Ryan Flores.
We got a lot of Ryans.
We got a lot of Ryans in your life. I think I'm on the side of the fence that we need to go everywhere except for Daytona, Talladega, and Martinsville once. So, I think – if we, you know, take a date away from Kansas and go to Milwaukee, Bristol Dirt Race, go to, you know, different places. I think it's better for the markets, most of the markets that we go to go there once. And if you can get a race in Milwaukee, right?
Pretty good market.
Will the race be great? I think Milwaukee's a hybrid of Loudoun and Gateway.
It got wide.
It got really wide.
They
raced side by side. It seemed like it was challenging to complete the pass. If we get the short track package, you know, tuned up on this race car, it could be a really great place to go that's race ready.
Shout
I'm always down for new places.
Big week this week in terms of GMS Racing announcing that this will be the last year in the truck series. What's it been, a decade or so since they've been fielding trucks? So you hate to see them go, and obviously it's essentially Legacy Motor Club, but GMS Racing is the truck side and the ARCA side. So it's got to feel good for Grant to be able to deliver those guys a win and also a ticket into the next round of the playoffs.
I'll tell you what everyone on Sirius Elise is talking about with trucks in Milwaukee is Majeski and what they're doing with tires.
Bleeders.
Mm.
They frown upon
that. What's going to happen to Joe?
Why did they get in trouble?
Yeah.
He had a little drill bit action?
No, valve stems of some sort.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they really frown upon that. So
it's like a circle, right? It comes back around every couple of years. It's not a new thing, right?
You kind of look like, have they been checking valve stems? And then somebody got the balls to do it, and like, ooh.
Well, and then someone out of nowhere just starts hauling ass, and you're like, all right, bring that wheel and tire to the dunk tank.
And they've been the one.
Yeah.
IRP. Nashville.
Nashville, Richmond.
Who's his crew chief?
Joe Scheer.
Oh, yeah, old school short track guy.
Oh, he ain't for scared. Sure.
Yeah. That's I've been chewed out before.
I've been chewed out before. He's getting chewed out now for sure. But hey, you got to love a little ingenuity. Interested to see what kind of penalties come with the 98 truck this week.
I'm sure they won't be late on him.
They will not be late, especially, you know, he won IRP, which puts him into the next round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they find it the following week.
Yeah, but they didn't find it that week.
They didn't find it that week.
If your team's doing something, Corey, do you want to know? Do you know?
One, we can't financially afford to do anything out in the gray area, so we just build box stock cars, which generally qualify 37th at Daytona. So with that being said, we give up a little bit in terms of just overall pace because we don't like to even step toe in the gray area because it's just for us as a team trying to build and trying to just create a name and reputation in the garage, we just don't even go there.
Messing around with the next gen car is a lot different than messing around with the truck too. Like the next gen car is suited to not, you don't cheat.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we saw a little bit of that. That's why what happened
but I would
Hendrick
like to
earlier
know.
In the year.
You I would like want to know.
For sure.
Really? Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
you're
I like a little,
guy.
Yeah, I like a little.
You're a car guy.
You'll live on the edge.
Yeah. Like I want to be in on the action. Yeah. You know? Like what are we doing?
Hey, let me know.
You want to know all about the drama.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of, I'm not calling it ingenuity. We'll just say skew. Stuart Haas cars, we were talking about this on Spare Change.
Yeah.
And you were like, they might have to give something up.
They did.
You know, but they
did. Those things handled well.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had speed all night, too. They just couldn't capitalize with track position. And I don't know if they just didn't work together great or they got broken up. But I saw Kevin Harvick in the airport after. I'm like, man, I thought you were going to get him one. He goes, it didn't work out in terms of blue ovals pushing them. Once you get the 17 and the 6 married to each other, you needed really and truly a teammate. And it didn't seem like the Hendrick cars were fast enough to really push and
Chevy's couldn't stay push attached. Like Fords either, right?
Yeah, I mean, they, what was, 8
especially
of the top
at the
10
end
qualifying
there.
A Ford. So
I thought Chase had the help he needed too. I'm like, oh, it's going to line up good.
Dude,
he's got the 5. 48 was close by.
Well, the 5 was
nothing.
A lap down, still yeah. Committed to him, right? So it just they never could get to the front lead of line. Mm. Oh, I would love to see freaking Kevin Harvick get a dub his last trip at Daytona. Does he get a win in the last 10?
I hope he does.
I don't know, man. There ain't much good coming out of Stuart Haas. There ain't much good being said about Stuart Haas. There's a lot of distractions over there, but if there's any team from there right now that could do it, it's that 4 team, Rodney.
How deep do they go?
Second to last seed. He's seeded 15th with 2,004 points. William Byron and Martin Truex are the leaders with 2,036 points.
He would, I mean, these first three tracks are tracks he's been good at. You know, last year, what took
he's
him out of this.
He's good at all the tracks.
But what took him out of this last year is a rocker panel fire. Right, we've got that fixed.
Yeah,
Darlington,
right.
Yeah.
So that changed the complexion of his playoff. I've learned long enough, like, you don't pull in Superman's cape, and he's one of those kind of Superman guys. So I would be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he got knocked out in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised if he went to the championship four.
Yeah.
Like, it can go either way for him.
Yep. Do you guys feel like this is one of the deepest playoff fields we've ever had?
It's one of the deepest cup fields overall, start to, like, top to bottom. There's three cars that any given week you can see up in the top 15 and not be surprised, right? You see Todd Gilliland in the top 15. It's like, oh, Todd had another good run. And he's 27th in points. You see, like, there's legitimately the strength of the overall field, top to bottom, is strongest it's ever been, no question. And then, in which case, makes the top 16 cars even that much stronger or potent. So, yeah, I don't – the top of the spear is always going to be the best of the best, and I think when you're talking about that, there can be, at the drop of a hat, 7 to 8 guys who can get on a roll the last 5 or 6 races of the year and find themselves in the championship four and win the championship.
There's no outliers.
Yeah.
There's nobody and it changes week to week, and your one mistake, right, hitting the fence, bending a toe link, leaving a wheel loose – bad strategy call away from not being able to make it up. You can't make it up, right? Back when we had the big three and Toyotas were dominant 1 year and Chevys were dominant 1 year, like, the big talk has been that Fords aren't very good. Well, they've went on a streak right now with the 34 and the 17, 6 car running good. Like, everybody
I don't remember anyone saying Ford was on fire last year.
And Joey Logano comes was out our of nowhere, champion. Right? Yeah.
Like, and that's exactly
that's Penske's MO. For when like I felt like
he's my dark horse. Like no one's talking. No offense, but no one's really talking about Penske right now.
Nobody is, and they shouldn't like, be. What? They haven't won. They we like as a team, Penske hasn't run great. But the problem is for everybody else. I feel like when you have a bad six race stretch before the playoffs, you're not going to keep guys like Paul Wolf and Travis Keisler. They have a smart people at Penske that are going to right that ship, and they'll be stronger for this 10-week stretch.
Yeah.
But you got to survive, especially when you have no playoff points.
For sure. Well, that being said, who's your four? Because I'm sure you've already figured it out, penciled it in. Who do you like?
It sounds kind of boring, but I spent a lot of time going through like results, past results, especially with the next gen, like at the playoff tracks and Phoenix specifically to pick my champion. Cause I knew William Byron, Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin were going to be in my three. And then I was like looking at the fourth, and the fourth was a little tougher. Like who was the last guy in? Was like Bell.
As long as Homestead Miami is in the last three races of the year, you just Sharpie in Kyle Larson.
And that's who I went with. Like, that's who I went with.
Sharpie.
Yeah. Larson's my fourth. Yeah.
So who's your first three?
My four is Byron, Truex, Denny, who were the top three in points. And then my fourth was Larson. And then looking at Phoenix numbers, ultimately, who did I go with? I went with Larson.
Yeah. I thought about this long and hard when you kind of sent out that text like, all right, let's go with our championship four pick. And I feel like being in the playoffs, like I'm a little bit too close to the fire that I don't even want to touch it. Because I'm a big proponent in believing in the racing gods, and I don't want to go there. I want to focus on the 12 car and make it to the next round, especially where we're only 1 point to the buffer. So the 24 has been strong.
I'm not in the playoffs, so I can pick my four.
The 19's been strong, all those guys. But I don't know that there's – hell, it'd be hard tonight. Like, you could talk about Brad, too. You know, the stretch of races that we have coming up, and he's good everywhere. So,
well, I said a week ago – I mean, Byron's never made it out of the round of eight. And, like, last week you were like, how do you not look at Byron to be the guy?
Yeah.
But look at his summer.
If he keeps beard, he is the guy. He's that dude with the beard.
It's looking better each week.
Billy Beard?
It's coming in.
If he grows a playoff beard, if he keeps that thing going, maintain, oil it up every now and then, Billy Beard is my pick for championship, ladies and gentlemen. Don't even need the other four.
That's your
Willie's
pick.
Willie's the guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Who are your other three?
No, it doesn't matter. Losers.
Congrats on making it to Phoenix. You lost.
Yep. Don't matter. He's
that
on
confident.
One this year. Yes.
Dude, his summer has been so inconsistent. Like, it was like win at Atlanta peak. And it was like 24th, 11th, 12th, 21st. Like, it just started to go like up and I don't know. I don't know that anyone. That's what makes it so hard. There hasn't been anyone that's just gone on like a heater where you're just like, oh.
Yeah. Well, because
everyone kind of like goes.
It's week by week of who brings a good car that week or not.
If you're going off championship favorites off the last 5 weeks, it's Chris Buescher.
Yeah. Go ahead and give him the trophy. give him the Bill France Cup.
He comes in seated fourth with 2021
He won the last short track we went to, which Phoenix is.
And he won Bristol last year. Watch out, ladies and gentlemen.
You're calling Chris Buescher?
No, I'm not. I'm not calling him, but I'm just saying if you're looking at what's been going on.
I would love to see that 17 underdog into the championship four. I hate it for him. He's going to get beat by William Byron. That's what it is.
The last 2 years I've picked Denny, and I'm just not going
to
do it.
I'll give you four just to play this game. William Byron, Chris Buescher, MTJ, and Kyle Larson.
You're leaving out Dennis.
Yeah. How many playoff
points
is he?
Seated third.
Yeah. I mean, hey, like – He's having a strong year. I think he would be the guy that would, and he gets around Homestead well too. But if Kyle Larson does have a problem, he's gonna win in Homestead. Like the way he drives that place is unbelievable. Just go back and look at his in-car camp.
Tyler Reddick's good too.
He is not Kyle Larson.
No.
Their pit crew scares me. Like I believe in Tyler so much, and they have so much speed, but like. They are not. I don't know if they've made changes and maybe they're moving guys around, but I don't know what they're
doing. Maybe we can break those down in Pit Road Boats and Woes. Playoff Pit Road Boats and Woes coming right up.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
For me, race day is a great reason to shut down the laptop, put the phone on silent, and simply enjoy the driving. But Mobile One wants to remind you that you can get that same kind of escape any day of the week. How? By simply hopping in your car, rolling the windows down, and hitting the road. No emails, no calls, no work, just freedom. Mobile One, for the love of driving. All right, guys, time for Pit Road Boats and Woes. We crowned a regular season champion in Martin Truex Jr., but if we had to crown a hypothetical regular season pit crew champion, who would you give that award to?
There's a lot to pick from. If we're going off of just pure speed, it'd probably be the 54 team.
Which, breaking news this week.
Yeah, we'll get to that, but it looks like they got switched to the 20. The 24 could be your hypothetical champs.
Yes.
And a team that I think hasn't gotten talked about enough is the 17 team. Like I said, they've won four races now with the Daytona 500, starting with the 47. They've swept Daytona. And, yeah, they're a young team, and they got moved up, you know, from the 47 to a house car for a reason. And I think a lot of those guys, it's kind of their first time as a, you know, in a playoff run. So I'm excited to see, you know, how they step up to the plate.
I forgot about that. So how long after the Daytona 500, Ricky lost his pit crew, what, a couple weeks later, right?
Yeah, within the first 10 weeks of the season, I'd say.
And they went to the 17.
Yeah, they just swapped the full team. I think they left the fueler. But for the pit.
Look at them now.
Yep. Hey.
Some dogs out there.
Dogs.
Young dogs, too. They're young guys. They make me feel old. But yeah, they, so speaking of swapping pit crews, right, we saw, you see the chips start to fall come playoff time, especially at certain teams where teams get in and teams don't. We saw it with the crew chief swap at Penske, and we saw it with Gibbs. You know, it's a hard thing to do because the 20 team is not a bad team, but the 54 is the best in the sport at
the
moment.
They won the pit crew competition at Wilkesboro.
And they've just been fast every week. So it's like, how do you leave that sit on the bench during the playoffs?
How dejected would you be if
I've been
you're
there.
The 20 all year?
I've been there, right?
How do you feel?
It's part of it.
So why are they moving them? Why are they putting Ty Gibbs' pit crew with Seabell?
Because they're just the best and in-house. So you can't leave your best team.
They consistently
the
are
playoffs.
Just smoking everybody. Just
54 is it right now. And the 20 has struggled with consistency a little bit. And they're not, like I said, they can go. They can go probably replace five or six teams that are in the playoffs right now and be better than them. It's just, unfortunately, the team that's not in the playoffs in their own organization is the best team in the sport at the moment.
Could any of those guys, the 20 guys, go to the 45 or the 23?
I don't know if that alliance works like that.
Because I know Denny's developing his own guys, but they train at Gibbs, right?
Yeah, they train at
Gibbs. The pickers on the 45 have been
muddy, murky thing. I think they have access to their backups. But like the guys on the 45 and the 23, they're all veteran guys that have done it. And yeah, they've had their woes throughout the year. But they're guys that have, you know, had deep playoff runs before. They're also, you know, the same team. Like you said, you don't trust their pit crew because of like highlights what happened in Michigan.
Yeah.
So that's, it's, you know, we can go through it case by case. Like even though Hendrick's two best teams are the 24 and the 5, they're both in the playoffs. The 9 cars race for a championship, so you're not going to mess with anything like that. But even if the 48 team, right, if there's one guy on there that's like their shining star in the company, they'll swap him out with somebody. It doesn't have to be a full team, right? You can kind of pick and choose to make teams stronger. And this is where pit crew coaches and, you know, general managers, department heads are going to have a hard time. Like, okay, who do we put where? I think one of the interesting teams as well as JGR, they've made the swap is RCR, right? The 8 team, they've had some turnover in their tire changers on the 8 car. They have really young guys on there now, but they have the 3 who was one of the best teams all year last year and is, I would say, by far their best team at RCR, they're out of the playoffs. So do they put them with the eight? But then it's not all, it's also not everything you see over the wall too. Do they get along with the road crew guys? How's the chemistry there? What's that going to be like? You just don't swap guys out and it be.
How much of an adjustment is it going from, call it three obscure races, two lefts, two backward stops, and then Daytona's, you know, mostly fuel only right side tires, to probably the most heavy burden track that we go to in terms of pit road?
Well, three of them in a row, right? Yeah. You're going to do 10, 12 pit stops this weekend. You're going to do seven next week in Kansas. You might do 10 in Bristol.
Yeah.
Like you could do 30 pit stops the next 3 weeks. And it's, you know, you haven't done that in the last five. And hell, half of them been backwards, but it's tough. You know, you got to lock in.
And you've done zero.
And I've done zero. I've just been watching. So it's tough though. And it's tough when you come back and you don't do something for a little while, like you probably feel it too. You're like, hell, do I remember how to do this?
Oh, I mean, self-doubt creeps in from
lunch. But it's just, you know, it's, you have to just lean on what you put in, the work you put in to preparing, right? That's why you go to practice. But you said something interesting before, like how do you deal with the Monday morning after Daytona when your car doesn't make the playoffs or your car makes the playoffs and you get the phone call, hey, man, you're out, right? Like what happened with Jeremy Bullins. Like, I've had that phone call from Jeremy, like, hey, we're making a swap here. And it's just part of the sport. And I think the older you get and the longer you're around, you realize that no matter how good the guys are around you, no matter how good of friends you are with the driver or how long you feel like you've been somewhere, being on a race team is
a bit
it's finite.
For
right?
Sure.
And it's not going to last forever, and you're going to have to change hats. You're going to have to change crew shirts. You're going to have to change teams and people you work with. My rule for it is be mad for a day. Like, if you want to be mad for a day. Call your friends, vent, bitch about it, and then the next day,
keep it moving.
Over it, back to work, right? And if you feel like you want to keep doing this for a living, you better figure out how next year you're the guy getting called up if your car doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's how, you know, there's people that are always collateral damage that, hey, we're moving the whole team, that maybe they're good enough to be on the team, but that's just part of the sport, dude. It's professional sports. So it's tough, but yeah,
so who
a lot
are the dogs
of, a lot
of
decisions.
Week?
Oh, see, it was pretty mild week on pit road.
Yeah.
But exit four in Charlotte, when I got a flat tire on my way home.
Felt like a dog?
From Savannah, this dog named Anthony came up and brought me. He went home and got a jack and brought it back.
Yes.
So
no.
Anthony from Charlotte on exit four.
For real?
Like some broke down gas station there is dog of the week.
Let's freaking go. Shout out to Anthony.
Yeah, I'm.
How'd that go down?
I was just driving down 77 with like a little bit of I'm like, babe, I believe we got a flat.
Which tire?
Right rear.
Okay.
And I pull off the road and I'm like, yep, okay. Get out my little owner's manual. My little jack. Jack this, get the old tire out from behind the license plate.
Yep.
Jack this thing up. Rolls off the jack. I'm like,
damn it.
I do this for a living. And this guy comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, you're going to want to. He's like guiding me how to change a tire. And I'm like, I'm like, just like, yep, I'm not. Here I am.
Just lug wrench.
What do you mean a dude walks up? Were you on the highway?
I was in a gas station.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Like, you're going to want to do this. We walked around Savannah. I got like white shoes on, a white shirt.
Oh, I'm sure you did not look like a tire changer.
I don't look like a dog at this moment, right? I look like a guy that needs
a poodle.
I look like a guy that's in distress.
Next gen got you all messed up. You only do one lug
yep,
now.
One lug. So, and then that had seven, which when we were changing five lug nuts, I was more apt to hit seven. But yeah, so it was kind of in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I said, hey, man, I used to hit seven lug nuts for a living.
Every week.
But I didn't, like, I was like, man, thanks. And he drove home, and you know those little bottle jacks, they
yeah.
don't like to work real well. He went and got his jack, came back and helped me out when I was wrapping up. So
what a dog.
Thanks to Anthony. I don't even know if he listens to the show or not, but hey.
Thanks,
sure,
Anthony.
I'm sure he doesn't. Well, give us a description. What does he look like?
Short white dude.
All right.
Yeah. He was
bald,
cool.
Hair, mustache.
He looked like a NASCAR fan.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Drove a blue pickup truck.
Dark features?
No, just
big nose.
Just the dude.
I'm trying to picture him in my head.
I don't know. You're lucky. I remember his name was Anthony.
All right, cool.
Yeah, Anthony from Charlotte.
Dog of the week.
Yeah. What a stud.
Jackman. Let's freaking go.
Yep. So would give him a job as a Jackman any day just from his help. But going this weekend to Darlington, I'm pretty excited because it's just one of those. The Southern 500 is one of those races where it's like it feels special, like this past weekend did, right? It's a different feeling. It's not a game seven feeling, but it's like, okay, the shit's real now, right? If you drop the car without a lug nut on it and have to back up and you're one of those top 16 guys, it's on TV. It counts, right? You're not just sweeping that under the rug like you would at Dover. Everything counts. Everything's on the line. A lot of room to work. Darlington's one of our longest pit roads. So it's going to be, I feel like with how long that pit road is there, it's really on the drivers for rolling speed. Qualifying is going to be super important to make sure you get a good pit stall. It's kind of broken up into like islands there. So you definitely want to be in a good spot where you can kind of be away from the cars you're racing. So you have clean in and outs, but even if there's a car in front of you, the pit stalls are big enough where you can kind of put a good body of work down. So I'm excited to see who's bringing their best to Darlington and moving forward.
We're all going to find out this weekend. On pit road, ladies and gentlemen, the first playoff race kicks off at Darlington. We got some Penny for Your Thoughts questions coming up from Danielle right after the break.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right, guys, time for Penny for Your Thoughts. We have good questions this week coming from some fans. At NASCAR7, Ryan, do pit crew guys work other jobs?
That is a good question, and I think it depends on kind of what series you're in. A lot of the guys in Xfinity or truck that pit on the weekends are more weekend warriors that work sometimes on the race car or have their own businesses. When you get more into like the bigger cup teams, like the guys at Gibbs, a lot of those guys just pit, and they focus on pit stops. Some of them have some hot side hustles that they do. When you go to like a team like Stuart Haas, all those guys work in the shop. They have them to where they, you know, do different jobs in the shop. Like Daniel Smith, the rear changer for the four cars, the head welder at Stuart Haas. Hendrick, those guys are all just athletes. So some of them do have other jobs. Like I have a business, flow coating, powder coat shop that I run, but guys, you know, I couldn't go there and work 40 hours with how much you have to put into being a pit crew guy. The first thing has to be the first thing. And at the end of the day, we feed our family off of the money we make doing pit stops. But yeah, if I was, you know, on an Xfinity car now where we practice like once a week, I would be more apt to have,
so
you know,
a bigger
side hustle.
If there's, let's just say 30 pit crew, 30 teams, 36 teams, let's just say 30 teams for math, five guys on a pit crew, 150 guys. What's the percentage of those guys that only pit solely?
75 cup guys. Yeah, 75. And then I would say like.
So half.
Like a lot of them don't, you can't have another full-time job. But like Justin Reisman, the gas man on the 21, he pits in the morning and then works for Bank of America in the afternoon. So he's got like a big boy job. Yeah, he's a banker or something.
Opening money market accounts.
Yeah.
Fueling cup cars on the weekend.
But there's guys that, you know, but he's a gas man, right?
Financial.
He's a gas man. So, like, how much does he really have to
he's
do?
He's not working,
you know,
very
what I mean?
Hard, but still, you know, but, smart dog.
But yeah, I'd say 75% and then probably 5 or 10% like own their own business or have their own side hustles. And some, you know, some guys do real estate, but it's hard. You can't have a full-time job and pit.
Yeah. You can't hold open houses on the weekends.
It'd be tough. Yeah. It'd be tough.
No, not on Sundays. Mobius Spider asks, after Priest's accident, do you feel as a driver, so this is for you, Corey, that Super Speedway should have any grass removed due to higher risk of going airborne?
That's been a topic of conversation this week. As you saw when the 41 went transitioned from as he was sliding sideways on the asphalt, and then when he transitioned to the grass, it packed another 3 or 4 inches underneath that car and just flipped it over like a top. So that's been a topic of conversation in the driver's chat to try to get NASCAR to pave it, particularly in the backstretch, you know, and they probably have some reasons as to why there's a little bit of grass, but I could imagine that everybody's going to be on board with trying to mitigate those types of crashes. Crashes are brutal. And I don't think the 41 goes for a ride like that if it's all asphalt. He might get upside down, but he's not pirouetting six times.
So if it's in the driver's chat and you guys are asking NASCAR to remove it, do you guys organize through the driver's council and like a Jeff Burton brings that to them?
Yep.
Is that how it works?
Yep. And a lot of times stuff that we're already talking about as drivers and drivers, either in the driver advisory council, NASCAR is already, the ball is rolling a bit and we just kind of nudge them more in that direction at a faster pace. So it's not like NASCAR sitting on their hands and just saying, well, that's just part of racing. That's not how they usually approach. It's not how they ever approach anything when it comes to safety and to try to make the car stay on the ground. That's their number one objective. When a car gets upside down, it's all hands on deck to figure out why and what can they do to prevent it.
Yeah, and Elton Sawyer was on SiriusXM and was asked about the grass specifically and said they're absolutely looking at it. So.
Yeah.
And removing it as an option. It's on the table. Good question. Last one. Race Fans Burner asks, if I'm not mistaken, every next-gen flip so far has been a Ford. Just a coincidence? Or could there be some aero component that makes one type of body more prone to going airborne?
It's an interesting observation. There's been three.
The 21.
The 21 at Daytona 500, first race. The 17... The Coke 600 when the right front dug into the storm drain. That wasn't an aero issue. That was just a ill-placed drain with a broken right front suspension. And then this week. So I think that's just a coincidence. No, I know that's just a coincidence. Yeah.
Okay. If you guys have questions, these are good ones. The boys like to answer them. At X, is that what we have to say now? Not Twitter anymore?
I don't know.
Everything I read, it's on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Corey loves
if you guys
TikTok.
Have questions, go to X, formerly known as Twitter. Submit your question using the hashtag Penny for your thoughts.
I thought it was interesting earlier talking about the flip that you guys, that they were like, I'm going to take it easy now. Because if I saw a car flip like that and then he got out and be like, oh, I ain't getting hurt.
Yeah.
Let's go. For
sure.
I would have been the other way. Yeah. So,
I mean, kudos to NASCAR R&D because it is a thankless job. Those guys, John Probst, John Padalecki, do over there at the R&D Center, but they have put a lot of effort and they put a lot of money spent, NASCAR has collectively, for the frontal crash test, to redesign the rear clips, to do a lot of work around the driver's compartment in terms of strengthening door bars, strengthening that particular corner on the A-post that hit the grass first with Priest was the area that was the weakest with the old car, and it's taken a ton of damage, and luckily our guy walked out good. So I think NASCAR R&D gets golf clap.
Oh, yeah, golf clap. Man.
Thanks for keeping us safe, guys. Cover Penny Stagger of the Week. Virgil, shout out to you, buddy. Thanks for coming this weekend. Hope you had fun. Hope you guys had fun listening to us this week. Make sure you tune in to Spare Change this weekend leading into the Southern 500. Gosh, I'm excited about that. Just gives me goosebumps just talking about it. Make sure you guys also like, download, share, rate, review, give us 5 stars, do everything, tell your mama about us. We'll be here.
On Instagram.
Follow on Instagram now. Great point.
Yeah.
At Stacking Pennies. We got stuff going on left and right, guys.
Listen to Spare Change.
I already said that.
Damn, okay. I'm not listening to you.
Anything else I'm forgetting? No, because I'm over.
Cheer for the 12 car.
And then cheer for me, too. But 12 cars in the playoffs. So you got your playoff choice, and then you got your non-playoff choice. And we're going to be loaded for bear going to Darlington Raceway this weekend. See you there. This is Stack and Pennies presented by Mobile One. Goodbye.